Don't have enough time to stay across all the latest news? ABC News Top Stories podcast explains the biggest breaking news stories and why they matter in less than 2 minutes. So you can hit play and get updated while brushing your teeth or making your lunch. And it's always up to date, ready whenever you're ready to get across the day's news. Just search ABC News Top Stories podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Absolutely, absolutely. Excitement is on the peak.
I'm very excited to see our Prime Minister, like Mr. Modi ji.
Oh, Modi is coming!
From Wurundjeri Country, I'm Luke Sim-Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, we're going to take a deeper look at the Indian Prime Minister's trip to Australia and the Modi mania that took over a stadium in Melbourne.
Prime Minister Modi, my friend, welcome to marvellous Melbourne.
But not everyone is happy with the reception Narendra Modi has received in Australia.
I think, yes, we should have friendly and respectful relationships, but we shouldn't be pumping the tyres of a regime that has such an appalling record when it comes to both human rights and also press freedoms.
As well as fans of the Indian Prime Minister, the former Australian ambassador, also the Resources Minister, you're going to hear from the Greens and Human Rights Watch. Plenty coming up from the Radio National Breakfast team on today's Breakfast Wrap. Well, we've reached the end of a really big week on the Breakfast Wrap, and boy, oh boy, we've got a lot to talk about today. Apologies if I sound a bit delirious or if you hear anything weird. Last night was quite a big one. More than 20,000 people were at Melbourne's Docklands Stadium to welcome Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi to Australia, and perhaps rather naively, I decided to go along.
Why are you here today?
Absolutely, absolutely. Excitement is on the peak.
Oh, Modi is coming! Our own Prime Minister! That's why I'm so excited!
I actually travelled 250 kilometres to come and see Prime Minister Modi from Traralgon, from Gippsland.
It's not easy to meet him in India. So it's, we are privileged that we are meeting here.
So before you hear today's interviews that Sally Sara did across the program, let me take you through just what we heard last night, because this event fell in the middle of a two-day leaders' summit Narendra Modi is having with Anthony Albanese. The pair entered the stadium together to huge cheers. Mr. Albanese opening for him with some brief remarks. He made this short speech. He called him a great friend. He also referenced his 90s backpacking trip to India, which apparently wasn't the first time he brought that story up that day. The pair both spoke about multiculturalism, and they shared a message of inclusion.
Australians of all backgrounds have been enriched by bringing your culture here and adding it to our multicultural character. We're a better nation because we have you in it.
Sathyo, it is said that the city of Melbourne, in just one day, shows you all four seasons. But the Indian community has made it even more vibrant.
Narendra Modi there, voiced by a translator. So his address was much longer. He played to the Melbourne crowd with a couple of those comments. He even said that he wanted to get a flat white with everyone. Maybe he would have got more points if he'd ordered a magic. I don't know. But this event really couldn't have come at a better time for the Indian leader. Indian-born Australians recently pipped English-born Australians to become the top country for Australians born overseas. And Victoria hosts the largest cohort of them, some 200,000 Indian Australians identifying that way. But it wasn't all cheers. There were jeers outside the stadium too. Demonstrators protesting Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalism, some of them arguing that it's encouraging Islamophobia inside India and beyond. There was also the Khalistani Sikh separatist movement, and there was even a pretty obscene anti-Indian migration protest that was drowned out with the drums of Modi supporters. But some of those concerns around racism and Islamophobia, they've been shared by leading rights groups like Human Rights Watch.
So we have seen a steady slide into authoritarianism under the Modi government. You know, one of the top line human rights abuses that we see is the targeting of minorities and the stifling of free speech. And what we see is the use of domestic laws to do this. And what we also see is that repressive governments that stifle and repress their citizens in the country also do it abroad.
That's what we heard from the Australian Director of Human Rights Watch, Daniela Gavshon. And it is worth mentioning that the Indian government denies surveying diaspora communities. She told me, though, that after the Prime Minister's last visit to Australia, there's real concern with how the Australian government was going to play this trip, in part because of this moment from 2023.
I said to my friend the Prime Minister before, the last time I saw someone on the stage here was Bruce Springsteen, and he didn't get the welcome that Prime Minister Modi has got. Prime Minister Modi is the boss.
So that's how Anthony Albanese welcomed Narendra Modi to the stage at a stadium in Sydney back in 2023. And when he was questioned about saying that later on, the Prime Minister told a reporter to chill out. It was just a Springsteen reference. Various organisations have been critical of that approach, and they've urged the government to change tact, not just by dropping the Springsteen references, which he did this time around, but to actually broach some of the thornier issues with Narendra Modi. And it's not as if conversations between the pair haven't gone to difficult places before. If you remember from the last trip, Narendra Modi actually brought up attacks on Hindu temples in Australia. It's something that had happened a couple times in the recent months. According to Narendra Modi, Anthony Albanese promised him during his visit that authorities would take strict action against anyone targeting Hindu temples. Human Rights Watch's Daniela Gavshon said that that is an approach that Australia could learn from.
If one government raises human rights abuses with another government, you want the government to go, yes, we will look into it and we will address it appropriately and accordingly. And so I think that visit, if anything, showed that actually raising human rights issues with a foreign government doesn't weaken a relationship. It actually shows that a relationship is more robust.
So having heard all of that, what have the leaders actually discussed? Well, they've agreed to deepen defence ties, share more military information, and they've also tied up a uranium export deal. Now, that is a real concern for some. This morning, Sally Sara did a whole string of interviews on the Modi trip, and we started off speaking with Senator David Shoebridge. He is the Greens spokesperson for Foreign Affairs, Peace and Nuclear Disarmament. And here's what Sally asked him first.
You've been a critic of the Modi government's human rights record, and you hosted a parliamentary screening of a BBC documentary about him, which was banned in India in 2023. Do you think it was appropriate for Anthony Albanese to attend this stadium event in Melbourne?
Well, I mean, I think our governments should have as friendly a relationship with India as possible, but it should also be based upon truth and honesty. And the human rights record of the Modi government is quite appalling. You know, the Muslim minority in India feel deeply oppressed by his government. Dalits feel like they are oppressed. We have very significant concerns about the collapse in press freedom in India. And, you know, a classic example of that was the film that we saw, which was critical of the Modi government, had actually been banned by the Modi government in India. So I think, yes, we should have friendly and respectful relationships, but we shouldn't be pumping the tyres of a regime that has such an appalling record when it comes to both human rights and also press freedoms.
Mr. Albanese and Mr. Modi announced Australia and India had finalised administrative arrangements allowing Australia to export uranium to India for peaceful purposes. We've had agreements in the past, but shipments were stalled. What are your concerns this time around?
Well, our concerns remain, as they've always been, about the trade in uranium. And our concerns actually reflect what Anthony Albanese's concerns were in 2011 when he opposed this deal when it was being pushed through Labor under the Gillard government. The Indian government is not a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It is not a signatory to the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. We know that it has about 190 undeclared nuclear weapons. It does not allow inspectors of that part of its nuclear program. So there is a very real fear that uranium we provide to India could be leaked into their nuclear program. And even if it isn't, if it's only used for their civilian program, well, that frees up their other stockpiles of uranium to be fed into a growing nuclear weapons program. Why are we any part of this? it's such an obviously reckless proposal from the Albanese government to promote this trade, and it undermines some of those key global agreements to try and reduce and eventually eliminate nuclear weapons.
India has flagged that it wants to significantly increase its nuclear power industry to help power data center development and further cut India's fossil fuel dependence. Is that a good thing for Australia to support those kinds of energy ambitions?
Well, again, there will be Australians across the country shaking their head and saying, are we really willing to undermine this global architecture to stop the proliferation of nuclear weapons in order to feed data centres in a foreign country? I mean, that may be the economic future that the Albanese government sets for Australia, to make sort of a future economic pitch on undermining global nuclear control deals, feeding foreign data centres. But I don't think that that reflects the values of Australians. And no doubt it reflects the values of a handful of very well cashed up resource exporters who have been pushing for this deal for decades.
Green spokesperson for Foreign Affairs, Peace and Nuclear Disarmament, Senator David Shoebridge there. So given this uranium deal, we requested an interview with Madeleine King. She is the Minister for Resources and the Minister for Northern Australia. She's in Melbourne at the moment, and she spoke to Sally about what she saw last night and also the uranium deal.
The diaspora of India plays such a significant part in Australia's ongoing well-being and our communities right around the country. I'm in Melbourne now, and it's amazing to see the crowd that was there at Marvel Stadium last night. So it's a really important step, and I really thank the Prime Minister Modi for coming to Australia this time.
What does the uranium agreement mean for uranium production in Australia?
It opens up opportunities for this export to India. And indeed, that was agreed some time ago with the treaty level nuclear cooperation agreement that came into force just over 10 years ago. And quite rightly, there's got to be quite strict administrative arrangements about that export of uranium. And it is Australia's position that we want to make sure India can only use, or indeed anyone we export uranium to, they can only use it for peaceful purposes. And we've got to a point with a lot of work with our friends in India to make sure that those administrative arrangements are well in place that will now allow for that export to commence, and the International Energy Agency will have oversight over that use. And what is really important, it cements a relationship, but also it makes sure Australia and India maintain that connection through energy security, and that's exactly what we want to do.
The Minerals Council is saying that this is an opportunity to overturn bans on uranium mining in some parts of the country. Does the federal government believe that overturning such bans is necessary to meet Indian demand?
The bans in different states are definitely a matter for the states. And my understanding is that the uranium deposits that are in operation now in those states that don't ban, and that's particularly South Australia, through the Olympic Dam mine, the Roxby Downs mine there, which I've also visited, is more than sufficient to provide for this exports. But no doubt there will be more talk about the levels. I mean, these are not massive volumes of a commodity, but I'll have to leave that to BHP to work with their customers through the Indian government, so to speak, to see what those volumes will be and what can be accounted for.
Earlier on Breakfast, Minister, we heard from the Greens Foreign Affairs spokesperson, Senator David Shoebridge, who's critical of the uranium export arrangements. Should Australians be worried about this trade when it comes to nuclear proliferation?
Absolutely not. What we want for Australia to be and remain indeed is a reliable partner in the energy security of our region. And India being part of that network where Australia has a pivotal role in energy security is really important. But for uranium specifically, and I do understand people's concern, that is why we have worked really deeply and very hard with our counterparts in India to make sure that those administrative arrangements are in place, and we have the International Energy Agency having really strict oversight of the use of Australia's uranium exports into India.
So trade and security cooperation is increasing between Australia and India. Did the Prime Minister raise any concerns about India's human rights record during discussions yesterday?
Well, I wasn't in the private meeting. There's been a number of meetings, as you'd understand. We discussed, the meeting I discussed, is how we were working together on a trade, but especially in education is so vital, a trade export between our countries. We've had eight universities now operate, Australian universities operate in India, also around the work the Geoscience Australia is doing with the Geological Survey of India for further exploration. So those are the matters I was a part of discussing with the Prime Ministers.
How would you describe the human rights record of the Modi government in India?
Well, I'm not going to speculate on that matter. As I said, my responsibility and my work.
Why not?
Here is
if
totally,
we're selling, but, if well, we're no, selling but my, resources to a country.
My focus is on how we work together productively in terms not only of resources but also in the education side of things, which is so vital. A country that is being lifted out of what can sometimes be quite oppressive poverty into a community that Prime Minister Modi has been responsible for providing
energy. Are human rights a factor in the government's decisions of which countries it wants to do business with?
We trade with our partners. We work with the governments and of those countries. And around uranium, as I said, we make sure there are safeguards in place, there are responsible use.
That's not what I'm asking about. Do human rights issues come into decisions about which countries Australia wants to increase trade with?
Well, we focus government to government in a responsible way of how we do this trade. So we have had, as you know, many other countries criticise what Australia does within its internal system. That's not what we're discussing right now, and I don't think it's responsible for us to do that.
Same with China?
Our focus is on making sure we are a reliable energy partner throughout the region. What that brings is peace and prosperity to the region. That's my focus, and it will continue to be that.
Madeleine King there, the Minister for Resources and the Minister for Northern Australia. Well, someone who's navigated these issues and has long dealt with New Delhi is Barry O'Farrell. He's the former Australian High Commissioner to India. He served in the role from 2020 to 2023. He's also a former New South Wales Premier, and he now serves as a special advisor to the Vice-Chancellor on India at the University of Sydney. Sally asked him how the relationship with India has changed in recent years.
Narendra Modi has now visited Australia three times in a decade. Prior to that, no Indian PM had visited Australia in almost 30 years. How have the relations between the two countries shifted in recent years, in your view?
I think, ironically, COVID reminded India, as well as other countries, about the need to have resilient supply chains, able to access goods and elements that you need for your economy from reliable partners. COVID shut everything down, and suddenly I think India took another look at Australia and realised that we have complementary economies. We don't compete other than on the cricket field. And so whether it's critical minerals, whether it's now nuclear, uranium for nuclear power stations, there's a whole range of things that each of us can contribute to the other to grow our economies.
Do you have reservations about these plans for Australia to send uranium to India?
Many countries around the world, particularly in Europe and in Asia, have nuclear power plants. India established its first nuclear reactor to generate electricity in 1969. It's never had a reactor meltdown in the way that we've seen them in other countries. And, of course, it is a non-fossil fuel. And India committed at the first COP that it would reduce fossil fuels by 50% by the year 2030. They're already reduced it by 36% thanks to massive solar farms, massive wind farms, and of course hydro. So it's a power mix.
But when it comes to safety issues around nuclear power and the use of this uranium, India is not a party to some of the international agreements and doesn't allow full access for inspectors. Is there a risk there?
But it does have a relationship with the United States established back in the 1980s, which ensures that there is a degree of reporting.
Are you comfortable with the level of public embrace from Anthony Albanese for Narendra Modi?
Well, you know, we signed a trade deal with India towards the end of COVID. It's already generating $40 billion worth of two-way trade, which is good for India. It's good for Australia. It creates jobs in Australia. It creates jobs in India. And I think the Prime Minister Albanese, also understands that India is shaking itself from its non-aligned status that it had previously had. Previously, it didn't like joining things. It was standing on its own. It now realises that in areas like the Indo-Pacific, you need to work with other countries to ensure that you maintain that free, safe and open lifestyle and economies and political systems.
How does Australia deal with the matter of human rights and the Indian government's human rights record? Do you think Australia can realistically strengthen security and trade ties with India while still having frank conversations about allegations of human rights abuses?
Yes, and I remind you that India has a constitution that commits to providing all citizens and visitors with certain unalienable rights. It has, unlike us, a highly activist high court. It's actually called the Supreme Court in India, which can order governments to stop programs, order governments to start programs, order airlines to refund lost fares during COVID in a way that the Australian legal system doesn't. And look, you know, no democracy has a perfect record. In the time that I was in India, we had many visitors from Australia. They never shied away from expressing Australian values, including some of the concerns that exist from time to time in countries.
And that is Barry O'Farrell, the former Australian High Commissioner to India. He was speaking with Sally Sara on Radio National Breakfast. So this trip is wrapping up with an announcement on sport that you'll no doubt have heard about by the time you're listening to this. But it is one of many announcements that journalists haven't been able to ask the Indian Prime Minister about. There are no pre-arranged opportunities for the Australian or Indian press to pose questions to Narendra Modi at any of these events. And that is not unusual for a Modi trip. As we've covered on Radio National Breakfast before, he's not answered a single question at a press conference for more than a decade. And India has now slipped down the World Press Freedom Index to 157th out of 180 countries. And that isn't lost on the Indian diaspora here in Australia. I had a chat with Pavan Luthra. He runs Australia's India Link diaspora newspaper. And he told me that Narendra Modi really doesn't need the mainstream press anymore.
I think press all over the world would all love it if Prime Minister Modi does answer a few questions.
Why do you think he doesn't?
Well, I believe that he lets his work do the talking, but it'll be good if he can actually take questions from the media, because India is doing well. The story is all there, it just needs to be told, and why not it be told from his narrative rather than a third-person narrative?
India is the world's most populous country. It's the world's largest democracy. Do you think the Prime Minister's lack of engagement with the press harms that image?
Not exactly, because we have found another form of engagement with the people, which is called social media. So yes, the Prime Minister of India, as at times as President of the United States, do not engage with the traditional media. But then Narendra Modi has got some millions and millions of followers, so he's able to get the message across pretty well.
Millions and millions. In fact, earlier this year, Narendra Modi became the first world leader to accumulate more than 100 million Instagram followers. For comparison, Donald Trump has 44 million. If you want to get a sense of the reach of this event, a photo that Narendra Modi posted of him and Anthony Albanese walking up the race in the stadium last night has got almost as many likes and comments as Anthony Albanese has total followers on Instagram, around 500,000. This event has far more reach for Anthony Albanese than any podcast he could do in the world. And for Narendra Modi, it's a huge opportunity as well. Indians are spending more and more time on the internet. In fact, Indians consume the most mobile data per user than anyone else on Earth. So it makes sense that Mr. Modi wants to turn his attention to where his electorate are increasingly spending their time, online, a place where he doesn't have to answer any questions. And he's under no pressure to do that in person when he's abroad. Of course, that just makes it even more difficult to hold the leader of the world's most populous country and democracy to account. So that is where we're going to leave things for today's episode of The Breakfast Wrap. We've been taking a deeper look at Narendra Modi's trip to Australia, what he has agreed to when he's here, and also some of the concerns with this visit. The Wrap was this week produced by Kathy Van Extel, and Radio National Breakfast is put together by a whole host of fantastic producers and reporters, led this week by acting executive producer Jason Whitaker. I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. We'll be back with more stories from Sally Sara next week.